case for argument, United States v. McGowan. Mr. Loeb.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court. Alfred McGowan was convicted in a jury trial, initially of narcotics conspiracy and two substantive counts for small deliveries. The conspiracy was what became known as the Aurora Latin King conspiracy. It revolved around Juan Corral, who was the supplier to that gang, and Corral had several other independent customers. The jury voted guilty initially of conspiracy and two of the three substantive deliveries that he was charged with. The substantive deliveries came 7, 8, and 9 months after the end of the conspiracy and was an independent investigation. When Mr. McGowan was found guilty of the two substantive counts, Judge Zagel granted his motion for judgment of acquittal on the conspiracy, leaving him convicted of two counts, a total of 12 grams of cocaine, a level 12 under the guidelines, and for sentencing purposes, not guilty of the conspiracy. At the sentencing hearing, based on relevant conduct, that level 12 and a range of about 2.5 years turned into a level 26 when over 500 grams were added to the base offense level and turned into a sentence of 11 years. The issue here is really entirely the relevant conduct. The relevant conduct that was used to enhance this very small conviction were two contemplated sales or purchases by McGowan that were part of the purported conspiracy. The conduct used to enhance this, the case went to sentencing, and with a PSI that was basically prepared before the judgment of acquittal on the conspiracy count was issued. And so the sentencing went ahead. The government admitted at sentencing that the sales to Christine Bew, the 12-gram substantive sales, were not part of the same course of conduct as the purchases from Juan Corral. And under the law on relevant conduct, it cannot be considered relevant conduct and cannot enhance the offense level if it is not part of the same course of conduct or modus operandi.
But couldn't the judge give the same sentence just by saying that this criminal activity, even if it's not relevant conduct, it bears on, you know, the appropriate sentence for purposes of deterrence and incapacitation?
If I understand your question, that would be under an advisory guideline scheme.
Well, that is one possibility. Another possibility would be, you know, even in the old days of the mandatory guidelines, you could adjust criminal history for an offense that a person hadn't been convicted of, right? You could say the criminal history understated the past record of the
that was done in this case. Judge Zagel said
something else, though, not with this. I'm suggesting that in the end it could come out the same because he could just sort of move this, what you're contesting, you know, I think you have good argument, not relevant conduct, move it into criminal history. Say the criminal history of his convictions understates his criminality, likely to recidivate, and so on. Is there anything to prevent that?
Yes. The magnitude of this particular enhancement, Judge Zagel moved the criminal history up one notch for other lifetime criminal drug dealing.
Right. His career as a drug dealer.
Exactly. then under the guidelines, adopting your suggestion, he could have moved another notch under criminal history. He could have moved still another notch in criminal history, been in level 6 at that point, the highest criminal history, and we've still only moved that sentence from 2.5 years to 3.5 or 4, I'd have to consult the exact nature. And then to go even higher, you would have to go outside the guidelines that it's still underrepresented.
So you're saying he would have to use his new post-Booker powers, too.
Yes, and this was post-Booker. There was no request to go above guidelines. Judge Zagel did not base his findings by going outside the guidelines.
Well, he didn't have to because the guidelines were so high as he calculated them.
Correct, but the basis and the record.
If this was sent back, as Judge Posner suggests, then the judge would recalculate the guidelines and then could, if he thought there was all this other cocaine involvement, but it wasn't relevant conduct that could be counted under the guidelines, he could nevertheless take that into consideration in fashioning an appropriate sentence, couldn't he?
That's not inaccurate, although I would point out that in terms of the possibility of a remand, everything that we are talking about was on the table, or what was known could have been presented. The government didn't ask for... I'm talking about at sentencing. The government didn't ask for an out-of-guideline sentence. The 553 and going higher was not presented, but rather the government relied on, and this I think is the important issue, the government relied on contemplated purchases from Corral, part of the alleged conspiracy, in order to enhance the offense level. And Judge Zagel said it was merely buyer-seller. The government is saying add the relevant conduct from the conspiracy, from Corral. We are maintaining that as a matter of law, that those particular contemplated purchases are not relevant conduct. The government itself at sentencing said this is not the same course of conduct. So a remand would be merely say the reason it wouldn't be appropriate is it would be to say Judge Zagel, consider this again, but it still isn't relevant conduct.
Let me say, what if as part of the conspiracy evidence it was presented that McGowan killed somebody. Okay. Now the judge sets aside the conspiracy conviction, but he has these two substantive counts to deal with. Could he not take into account that he killed somebody if he believes that that's what the evidence showed?
It would still have to meet the test of relevant conduct.
Why?
If the killing...
Why? If that goes to these Section 3583 factors and...
Okay. It would have to meet the relevant conduct definition to be part of the guideline calculation.
Right. Yeah, to be part of the guidelines, it would. But once we determine the guideline range, then it's an advisory system. The judge can consider a lot of different things.
I have the warning light, and I do want to reserve rebuttal, but in response to your question... I think he could consider other conduct under 3553. However, we would then enter the tail wagging the dog issue where the increase, the increment is so great, so unrelated to the substantive conviction that it would risk constitutional infirmity. That's a different issue, perhaps.
Sure.
Mr. Loeb, I want to ask you about the pre-sentence report, but I'll save it until you come back.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Loeb. Ms. Perry?
May it please the court, counsel. In this case, the defendant engaged in a consistent pattern of drug dealing for over 2 years. Moreover, Christine Bew was involved in that drug dealing for that two-year period. She began purchasing cocaine from defendant in 2001.
Why did the judge set aside the conviction on the conspiracy count?
It was purely a buyer-seller determination. The judge determined that, and the defense at trial argued that he was merely a drug purchaser, that there were no agreements beyond the purchase of drugs and the resale of those drugs.
Okay.
But the judge made factual findings that the defendant had engaged in this drug dealing for this entire time period, that he had engaged in repetitive sales from Corral, or purchases from Corral, and then the resales to his own customers. And the evidence at trial did show that he was reselling. First, he was cooking some of that cocaine into crack cocaine, and then he was reselling it to other people. And there's discussion in the tapes about his customers and my people and the people that he was dealing with apart from Juan Corral.
What, with the time frame, or there were two counts of conviction. There was some indication, Mr. Bell, that the pre-sentence report was prepared before Judge Zagel dismissed that conspiracy count?
That is correct. The
was it amended?
It was not amended, no.
So the pre-sentence report information submitted to to Judge Zagel assumed that there were three counts of conviction.
Yes, that is correct. However, it ultimately didn't make a difference. All of the parties were obviously present for the trial. All of the parties were present for the post-conviction motions.
Well, I understand that, but the recommendations and comments of the probation officer in the pre-sentence report were based on three counts of conviction versus two, right?
That is correct.
Sounds a little like Alice in Wonderland, right? Sentence first, then trial.
Well, I do not agree with that, Your Honor. The pre-sentence report, the distribution counts obviously get grouped into the conspiracy count. But for drug calculations and drug guidelines purposes, there's really only one base offense level depending on the total amount of drugs that were involved. So the fact that there were multiple counts of conspiracy don't ultimately matter when you're looking at the narcotics guidelines.
What was the recommendation of the, or maybe you don't know that, the recommendation of probation officer?
We don't have that portion of the PSI in our files. That goes only to the district court.
But get back to this. Buyer-seller is a typical defense in a conspiracy case. I argue it wasn't a conspiracy. It was a simple buyer-seller. The jury was instructed on that and apparently rejected that.
That is absolutely correct. It was argued both in opening and in closings. The jury did reject that. They found there was an agreement beyond just the mere purchase and sale of drugs and that it was buyer-seller. My assumption would be there's the list of six factors in the buyer-seller instruction. And some of those factors include the length of the relationship, the quantities of drugs. In this case, Corral testified that the quantities of drugs were between 15 and 25 kilograms of cocaine. And, in fact, the jury, in their special verdict, found that it was more than 5 kilograms of cocaine and more than 50 grams of crack cocaine.
The government, of course, didn't cross-appeal on the...
No, we did not.
Why?
I was not counsel at that time, but, Judge, it was a Rule 29 ruling. I personally think that the district court was in error in overturning that. However, we did not cross-appeal that. Returning to the judge's quantity determinations, they were highly conservative in this case. Taking just Christine Bew's purchases from the defendant, if the government had argued at sentencing, which we didn't feel the need to do because the sentencing guidelines range was already so high, but we could have argued that simply Christine Bew's purchases should be used as relevant conduct. And we would urge the court could affirm on that basis as well. And Christine Bew's purchases alone were 1 gram of crack cocaine per week for 2 years, which would put the defendant at a much higher guidelines range than the district court did. Moreover, once again, as the jury found, the amount involved in the conspiracy was much higher than what the district court ultimately found. Overall, this was a very, very conservative drug quantity finding. While the district court never explicitly said he was making a relevant conduct determination, it is very clear from a reading of the transcript that that's what was being done. the government started the sentencing hearing by saying that, as they understood it, the only issue at sentencing was one of relevant conduct. And throughout the sentencing hearing, that's the only issue that the parties were arguing. So it was clear from the record that relevant conduct is what was being determined. Based upon the district court's implicit findings, as well as the arguments of the parties, we feel that the defendant's sentence should be affirmed. There are no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Perry.
Thank you.
Mr. McGowan?
First, can I ask, have we disposed of the PSR concern? Fine. I feel like we're back all the more so in Alice in Wonderland. The government led off the sentencing hearing with the only issue is relevant conduct.
I misaddressed you as your client.
I understood.
Okay,
you meant me, though.
I'm sorry.
It was the data purge in that.
Scramble.
Leads off the sentencing, the sentencing hearing with he's convicted of these two counts now, and we want to add relevant conduct, and they chose to admit evidence not of Christine Bew and other sales that Mr. McGowan may have made to that. They didn't introduce that as relevant conduct. They said, we want you to consider these conversations on the phone with Corral as relevant conduct, all the, at the same time as they're saying it's not part of the same course of conduct. The last date of that activity, to use the phrase of the morning, was some 9 months before the transactions with Christine Bew.
If all the transactions with Christine Bew were considered, would that be enough cocaine to jump over whatever the limit was here to get to the guideline range that the judge ultimately got to by using all this other...
No, it would not. It would be higher. However, the only thing in the indictment with Christine Bew were these three very small sales. It's one or two throwaway lines in her testimony.
But if she said, I bought cocaine from him once a week for a year in this amount, that's a lot of cocaine. I don't know if that's true or not, but if that's what she said.
One, we very much contest that was reliable. It wasn't charged. But two, that still doesn't get you anywhere near the amounts that would give rise to an 11-year sentence. It would still be much lower. But the point is, it wasn't introduced at sentencing at all.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lubman. You were appointed, were you not?
I was, yes.
So we are grateful for your efforts on behalf of the
Thank you.